Nick Cashew, Team 980. Talk to Mike Jones in a couple of minutes here. Wrote about Terry McLaurin, too, and just the season he went through last year. I think a really kind of the first real look we've had into, you know, now we're getting a bunch, but specifically, you know, Terry McLaurin, who just signed a new deal, obviously, and then goes into a season where he's hurt, everybody else is hurt across the board, and it just becomes, I mean, a trickle-down effect, as we know. All our football coverage on the Team 980 is presented by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi, one price, 5 years guaranteed. Xfinity, imagine that. You know, that's the thing that gets forgotten a lot, too, right, is when guys go through a bad season, injuries, struggles on the field, whatever the case is, man, they're human, and that stuff lingers because the one thing we know is that Terry McLaurin wants to be great, always has wanted to be a great impact on the field, but also off the field with this organization. And Mike Jones jumps on with us now, The Athletic. And Mike, I'm just talking about that article you wrote about Terry McLaurin and, you know, enduring what he called the hardest year of his life. I just thought it was just such a good look inside, you know, what Terry McLaurin obviously went through. But I think just in general, people forget, Mike, that, like, these dudes are human, and you go through a season that you're dealing with injuries and the team struggling and all that. Like, that wears on you mentally.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And just the whole first exposure to actual the business of football, it was the first time that he'd been through that. You know, you're expecting, you know how productive that you've been, and you're expecting that you're going to be rewarded accordingly, and the franchise tells you, nah, you're not worth nearly as much as you think you are. And so he said that really kind of impacted him, and he really had to wrestle with his sense of self-worth. And then also, you know, your agent is telling you, hey, don't go to OTAs, don't go to training camp, you know, stay away, you know, and you're kind of like a very loyal guy who wants to be there and lead by example and everything, and you're staying away, or you're watching practice as a hold-in. That was all things that he felt so conflicted about. And so that all added to the emotional and mental toll of the whole thing. And then, like you said, then you get hurt, and you're just not quite right and aren't able to produce like you're used to. And it really is, it's a tough situation for a player.
You know, when you look at this season, obviously there's a lot of talk about last year and Dan Quinn saying that, you know, they kind of thought they'd already arrived before they did. Or, you know, I was convert Jeremy Reeves talked about that too. And, you know, the Jaden Daniels is like, we're putting last year behind them and all that. When you look at this team now, this Commanders team, obviously the money they spent in free agency addressed a lot of needs. Spread that over to a lot of different positions. I mean, what are your expectations on this team and what you would consider a successful season for them?
Yeah, I mean, look, they are young in several areas. You know, their defense is younger than what it was last year, which is a good thing. They needed to get younger, more explosive, more impactful. I think their defense will be better. You know, their offensive line will be better. Obviously, wide receiver has been improved. They just need Jaden Daniels to be able to stay healthy. If he can stay healthy, I think that they can win 9 to 10 games. And then you're, you know, in the mix in the NFC East for a playoff spot. And so I think that's realistic for them. Obviously, you have the Eagles, who are a well-constructed team, but they're starting over with a new rookie offensive coordinator like Washington. You've got the Giants, who are starting over from scratch with John Harbaugh. The Cowboys have a good offense, but their defense has been historically bad, and so they've got a new coordinator and a lot of new pieces, and it could take time for chemistry to develop. So I think that the division is wide open, and Washington should be in the mix.
So I'm glad you said that, because it really does feel like, for the first time in a while, like for years it's kind of felt like, oh, this is the Eagles division to win. And, you know, there's always that hype around the Cowboys almost. It feels like maybe every other year it really kicks in. Dallas, though, Mike, they made some additions to this defense this offseason. How improved do you think that defense really is? Because I know it's one thing on paper, it's another in terms of, like, can this come together, how long it's going to take with some of the younger guys there. I do feel like with what Dallas has done this offseason and given the weapons they have offensively already, that they might be a team that can actually dethrone the Eagles in that division.
I mean, we'll see with that defense. Obviously, they can score points with the best of them, but can they stop anybody? And they have added the pieces that seemingly would help that defense improve. And look, even if you go from, you know, in the 30s and low 20s to up to just middle of the pack, your defense is significantly improved. Is that enough to dethrone the Eagles? I don't know, but I definitely think it's enough to compete for a wild card spot. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all comes together. You've got, you know, And Christian Parker is regarded as a bright, young defensive mind, but he also is learning on the fly because he's never called defense before. And so there will be learning. And so I'm not going to just, like, throw them in there to, you know, as, like, leaders of the pack. But I think the potential is there for them to contend in the division.
This is good. That's the right approach because we know that every single year, especially once the playoffs hit anyway, Mike, they'll flame out once the playoffs hit. So there's my one shot at Cowboys and all their fans. Talking to Mike Jones here at Team 980. On the Eagles side of things, you know, look, we had that, I guess you could say, report. I don't know what we'd even call it in terms of, like, Jalen Hurts and how he interacts with the offense and, the you know, how he does, he's rigid and all those things. It kind of, to me, and this is just my personal opinion on this, I don't, it felt like there was a preparation to kind of make him the scapegoat if the offense doesn't succeed this year with another offensive coordinator. What type of pressure do you think is on Jalen Hurts this season? And is this a potential of, like, if it doesn't work this year offensively, they start thinking about other options? Is that too extreme? Like, where are the Eagles and Jalen Hurts right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is definitely, you know, pressure on him to perform. They have invested a lot in him. He's got, you know, a lot of weapons around him. But, you know, there's also pressure on Nick Sirianni because, look, yes, you won the Super Bowl. He's an offensive-minded head coach who's never been able to figure out how to fix his own offense. They, you know, had the great year with Kellen Moore. Now, they've got the pieces around Jalen Hurts. If they can help him get back to what he was, where he took what the defense gave to him, he's a very good deep ball thrower, you know, then that helps them. They have this year, next year, and looks like they can get out of his contract the year after that, and after 2027. So, I mean, I'm not saying this is a do-or-die year for him, but it definitely is something that they want to see him get back to where he was. And, I mean, I don't want to make predictions that they would look to move him, but the heat definitely intensifies if he has another year of struggling this year.
Another team over in the AFC that's got a quarterback, I guess it's questioned, but I know you wrote about this over at The Athletic as well, you know, the Texans and C.J. Stroud. And, you know, it's interesting because we obviously saw what he did his rookie year, and it's not like that team still hasn't had success winning a lot of games in the time that he's been there, but, you know, there's a lasting image of what happened in the playoffs, and I know the weather was bad, and we can look at a lot of different things, but, man, C.J. Stroud had a rough end to his season last year, and that defense was really the only thing that kept Houston in that game at all. In terms of this season coming up, is this kind of one of those, like, it can't be do or die because, I mean, the Texans certainly know they've got a talented quarterback in C.J. Stroud, but where do they sort of stand right now in terms of their future? They've obviously got to start thinking about contract as well with him.
Yeah, well, they've given all the, like, the table set. They've got a fantastic defense that got even better this year. If he just takes care of the football in the playoffs, they win against New England. They beat the wounded Broncos, and they're in the Super Bowl. You know, they overhauled their offensive line to make that better. They added David Montgomery, so he's got a strong run game. They're going to have Nico Collins healthy again, Tony Dell healthy again. And so he's got, you know, they added another tight end. So they've got everything he could ask for. The thing that D'Amico Ryans challenged him is, he didn't say be an elite quarterback, be an elite thrower. He said be an elite decision maker. So if he can just be smart with the ball, then they are going to win a lot of games and can contend. They are content to wait and see and not feel the pressure to give him a mega deal right now. He's playing out the fourth year of his rookie contract, and they've got the fifth-year option that gives him a little more time. Obviously, he would like a long-term extension, but that's going to be, you know, determined on how he plays this year. So they don't have to make a decision right now, and they are just doing everything they can to put stuff around him and see if he can capitalize.
Oh, we know, like here in D.C., when you don't have a quarterback or you have quarterback questions, it's a rough waters to navigate. And if you're Houston, you still got a better situation than a lot of teams in the NFL. Talking to Mike Jones here, Team 980. So Kyler Murray was named the number one quarterback for the Vikings. I'll tell you what, man, I actually think he's going to have a good year in that Kevin O'Connell offense. I don't know what the long-term future necessarily is there, but, you know, it's definitely got to be tough for the Vikings, Mike, because J.J. McCarthy now is a guy you draft in the first round, and he's already now gone through so many injuries, and they bring in Kyler Murray. He wins that number one job. Does that kind of feel like this may be almost a change there where they're maybe looking at Kyler Murray as more of a long-term guy and J.J. McCarthy could be on his way out after this contract runs out for him?
Well, I mean, I think that this is going to determine, you know, I think that Kyler Murray will be good in that offense. Kyler Murray's got to show he can stay healthy. That's been the thing with him in Arizona. He was never able to fully be as impactful as he could have been because, you know, he's like 5'8". And so I think Kevin O'Connell trusts him more than he trusts McCarthy. But say he gets week 8 and, you know, Kyler Murray gets hurt, then that opens the door for J.J. McCarthy to try to get some redemption. So we'll see what happens there. Obviously, they messed up. They should have franchised Sam Darnold and had J.J. McCarthy sit one more year after being out for a year. He was not ready to play. It was shown last year. And so Kevin O'Connell, they fired their general manager. Kevin O'Connell knows that he's got to get them in contention this year, or he could be in a similar situation. So that's why he's willing to roll the dice on Kyler Murray rather than be patient with J.J. McCarthy.
Is there a team that you look at? Because like every year we have that, I know we call it worst to first. It's not always worst to first. But, you know, that team that makes a big jump. Is there a team that you're looking at right now that you could see making a big leap this year?
I don't know. I think that there are teams that could be intriguing. You know, I'm very curious to see how Tennessee does in their first year with Robert Saleh. They've got a quality defense. I'm really curious to see what year 2 of Cam Ward looks like with Brian Daboll designing an offense around him. So they'll be interesting, I think, in the AFC South. The whole NFC South is intriguing to me because there's nobody that really stands out. Tampa had been the leader of that pack, but last year they fell apart second half of the year. And, you know, so the door is open for Carolina to make some noise, for Atlanta to try to get the ship righted, and for the Saints to close the gap on them. So it's going to be interesting to see how they work in that division. But those are all teams that were just below that line that could take a jump and to be in playoff contention.
Yeah, speaking of that too, I mean, Baker Mayfield obviously wasn't happy with not getting a contract extension in Tampa. Vita Vea requested a trade there. Is that stuff that's going to linger into the season, you think? Or what do you hear in terms of kind of where the organization is with those guys?
I think Baker is going to go out there and ball. I mean, he's going to be highly motivated. He's, you know, given everything and put them in great position the last 4 years, you know, and so we'll see. But, I mean, the way that that team really just kind of wilted down the second half of the season, I thought Todd Bowles could possibly get fired. But he's back for another year. He cleaned out his coordinators, starting afresh. And so everybody is basically on, you know, auditioning for their futures with this team. And I think that's part of the reason why they didn't want to give Baker a big long-term deal, because they don't know how this thing's going to play out. He did kind of struggle with some interceptions second half of the season. He wasn't really fully healthy. And so they have some reservations. And we'll see if things can work themselves out and he can get himself a long-term deal, or if they wind up blowing the whole thing up.
Are we just all going by the assumption now that Aaron Donald's going to be coming back soon with the Rams?
It sure seems like it. And, you know that the 49ers, the Cardinals, the Seahawks got to be hating the idea of that.
Yeah, and the Commanders are going to see him this season, too, with a banged-up offensive line. Can't wait for that. Mike Jones, The Athletic, great to talk to you, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And check out everything he's got at The Athletic, including his article on Terry McLaurin, which I think, again, is great. You know, that's stuff that gets forgotten sometimes. Yeah, man, like, this is the one thing I will say, man. When it's all said and done, whatever Terry McLaurin's career ends looking like for the Commanders, for this organization, dude's going to be revered. Like, you know, there's certain guys that we look at over the course of, you know, and let's make it the Dan Snyder era, because there was a lot of bad there, so you're still looking for the good. It's obviously different when Joe Gibbs was coaching the first time and you're winning Super Bowls and everything's different. But, you know, the Santana Mosses, the Chris Cooleys, the Terry McLaurins, who's part of that. Like, those guys, in the end, like, they kind of surface through all the bad. Because that's the thing, man. Terry McLaurin has been here since 2019. Third-round pick, we saw almost right away, oh, that's a steal the Commanders got, right? Like, whoa, okay. And then throughout the entire time, there's been a quarterback rotation. There's been this quest to find a receiver opposite of him, and you finally have somebody like that now in Stephon Diggs. And even then, it's not Stephon Diggs in his prime, though I think he's still going to have a pretty good season. You know, there's still, you know, it's not Stephon Diggs when he's 26 years old. There's a difference there. So, you know, it's just been the entire time Terry McLaurin has been in the ultimate professional. I would argue exceeded expectations because half the time he's the only receiver that defenses have been paying attention to. He goes up into double and triple coverage and makes plays every time he's throwing the ball. So there's nobody that I want to see succeed more on this roster than Terry McLaurin, given what he's meant to this organization. It's just now getting to that point where how much of that time is left? What does this season look like? Coming off of last year, if he starts to get banged up again this year, it's going to be rough. It's going to be hard for this team to continue to, you know, move forward and carry that large salary, especially once money's not guaranteed anymore. Because remember, it's not a ton of it that's going to be far down the road where may not be that much longer. But it also could go the other way. And then you're revitalized and you've got some help and you've got a new offensive coordinator, new offense, and Jaden's healthy. So again, it doesn't have to go the bad way. It can also go the better way as well. Nick Ashew on the team. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Sprained MCL for Marcus Mariota, according to Adam Schefter, so he'll miss the rest of the preseason, but hopefully, fingers crossed, nothing more. And again, if Jaden Daniels is healthy, then it's not going to matter anyway, but you got to have a good backup. Got to have a good backup in this NFL. I mean, really, like one play, I don't care if your quarterback's mobile or not, injury-prone or not, one play, one hit can change the trajectory of your season. I mean, one of the big examples is going all the way back to, what, 2010 or whatever it was with Tom Brady tearing his ACL, one hit at the knee. Matt Cassel stepped in and, I mean, played really well for them. They ended up trading him to the Chiefs and got a lot more than what his value really was. So, not saying that Marcus Mariota is going to get traded. All I'm saying is that there is value in a backup quarterback, and you need one. And he doesn't need the preseason, and he's kind of been banged up the last two preseasons anyway. Plus, this team has made a point to show that they're going to keep things safe with injuries and recovery and take their time, and it's not going to be something that's rushed. So we won't see Marcus Mariota the rest of the preseason. Now, Dan Quinn obviously didn't know at the time when he had his press conference after the game Friday night, but of course was asked not just about Marcus Mariota, you know, but also like what his essentially Mariota's backups, right, looked like. Sam Hartman and Ethan Calliope-McManus. Here's what he said about their performance.
You know, coming in, I was pleased to see him in the chaos. And so I thought both quarterbacks did a nice job at the end of the half. It's not something that's going to show up on the stat sheet, but Sam using a lot of the clock, you know, in a 2 minute at the end of the first half, you know, we were able to get in. And so using that clock so they don't have another op, knowing that we were going to get the ball to start the second half. And then for Ethan to see him communicate and then also be at the end of the game using the clock in a 4 minute, anytime you can, like, basically end the half, you know, with the ball, you know, to get points and end the game, you know, with it. That's a big deal. And the quarterback has a big responsibility in that, using the clock. I didn't use timeouts until it got to a certain spot. So he felt calm in the space tonight. I'll be looking forward to watching him. I thought you'd see his arm strength come out a little bit, and it did on some of the play action passes. Both probably had a couple throws they'd like to have back. Sam had an interception and one that could have been AK on a sack, you know, that needed to be a throwaway to cause the longer yards. Those are learning lessons that they need. And I knew coming in that there would be mistakes, but I also recognized, like, make them. You know, like, how do you learn from them? How do you grow? And that's what I'm looking to see from he and Sam, you know, as we're going. Like, when the mistakes happen, are they repeated? Do they grow? But I thought, you know, DJ did a nice job getting the guys ready into that spot. You know, obviously, like, didn't want to see Marcus leave earlier. But Sam, I thought, was ready for the moment and made a couple good throws and some conversions that we needed at that time after a long drive, you know, to go down a score against us.
And look, unfortunately, Sam Hartman is just not an NFL quarterback. Ethan Calliope-McManus has a better chance of making this roster if he looks decent, at least in preseason. And he's going to get opportunities because, you know, they drafted him as somebody that was a developmental quarterback. They're not looking at him to be a starter, but they're looking at him as somebody you can develop, which every organization should have. You know, a young quarterback that's on your practice squad, a young quarterback that you're looking at as like, hey, he's somebody that can learn the game and, you know, has the potential to be a backup for us down the road. Because how much longer is Marcus Mariota going to play? If you have somebody that's a younger quarterback that you trust as your backup that knows the system, right, that continuity That's a great spot for them to be in. Now, do they sign somebody else for the rest of preseason? Maybe. Jeff Driscoll's out there. He's been with the organization. I wouldn't be surprised if they bring him in as, you know, at least a camp body and another veteran to be there. Mariota's going to be out. What, Jaden Daniels maybe plays, I don't know, a series again with the starters against Detroit next Saturday? It's probably what we're looking at. So, it's preseason, and guys are going to be looking to make a name for themselves. Guys are going to be looking to get some stuff on film. So that's really what a majority of this is used for. I can't imagine we see much more than a series from Jaden Daniels and the starters, but you want to get them out there a little bit in the preseason. It's just really a question of how much. I mean, there is the pickings are real slim if you're looking for bodies at quarterback that are free agents, like John Wolford, Jeff Driscoll, and Jimmy Garoppolo. And Garoppolo's talked about retirement. I don't know if he's officially retired. Wes, he hasn't officially retired, right? But I know that was a thing.
No.
I don't think he has. I mean, honestly, there's still something there. I'd bring him in as a veteran if you want that and maybe keep him on the roster if he wants to play. But, I mean, who knows? He may not even want to play anymore. But, you know, listen, it could have been a lot worse. It could have been a lot worse for Marcus Mariota. So a sprained MCL is about as good as it gets. But, yeah, you have to be careful. You have to be careful with any injury that it could lead to something worse. And that's where a lot of the caution comes in, especially with this entire organization. I mean, we've watched them make sure that guys are as healthy as they think that they can be before they let them back out there on the field. A sprained MCL can then lead to more damage to your knee, right? Like, it's not structurally sound, and you could tear an ACL. We've seen that before. A calf injury, like Nick Allegretti's dealing with right now, can lead to, you know, at some point, it's happened, right? Torn Achilles. So you have to be cautious. But it's just, you know, it's tough right now because Nick Allegretti is missing time, and it's valuable time in camp, that he needs to be out there in a new offense playing essentially a new position. Yeah, he's cross-trained and learned stuff, and he's a veteran, but it's not the same as doing it full-time at center. And you have left tackle that's already up in the air. Brandon Coleman's going to be filling in for a Pro Bowl left tackle and Laremy Tunsil. So this offensive line is vulnerable now for the Commanders, which is really the big reason why. It's just like this is a dangerous situation if Marcus Mariota's hurt. So they're lucky that it's just preseason. And, yeah, again, I know you hope that he's never on the field, but you have to prepare in case that's something that happens, that in case he actually is needed on the field and Jaden Daniels gets hurt. I mean, look at what happened last season. Now, two seasons ago, Jaden was good, but we still saw Marcus Mariota even then. There were still some minor injuries that Jaden went through, but Marcus Mariota as a backup that has maybe like a spot start here and there or fills in if Jaden has to go to, God forbid, the blue tent for some reason before he comes back out, you're in a good spot. One of the better backups. If you expect 10, 11, 12 quality starts from Marcus Mariota, you're in trouble. And that's what happened last year. Like, yeah, he won one game as a starter for them or whatever last year. Great. But here's the thing. They had nobody else on that field either. And Marcus Mariota is the type of quarterback that needs other talent around him. He's a good backup. The offense can stay, you know, semi-similar in some ways. He's mobile and he's a veteran and he's comfortable in those situations. But it's not like Marcus Mariota. He's a backup for a reason. Elite quarterbacks in the NFL elevate the talent around them. But there's very few that actually can do that, right? So, yeah, of course Marcus Mariota struggled a lot last year. People are like, yeah, get him out of here. Okay, for who? Like, I always ask that question, and usually it's with starters, but in this case it's for a backup at least. For who? Jimmy Garoppolo, John Wolford, or Jeff Driscoll? That's who's on the market right now. Russell Wilson technically, but he's retired. Do you want that? Russell Wilson is a shell of himself. So, like, there's not many choices out there. And Mariota's not going to look good when he's down to like his fifth string receiver and half the offensive line is out and the run game's getting ignored and there's bad play calling and everybody's hurt on the team and the defense has given up 14 points in the first quarter and they're trying to throw themselves back in games. Like, nobody was set up for success at all with this team last year. Yeah, did it expose weaknesses? Did it expose their preparation? Did it expose their depth and lack of talent and youth? And yeah, all of that. But this team did address that this offseason. And that's one of the important things, is that they did go out and they addressed what they needed to do defensively. And you obviously hope all the free agent signings hit. You hope that everything works out for this team where guys exceed the contracts and the expectations. And the offensive line is still intact. And Nick Allegretti looks good at center. And Brandon Coleman does a great job filling in for Laremy Tunsil. There is an upside to all this, and there's a good possible outcome for it. It's football, and stuff happens. So it's a big break. I'd like to think it's the football gods telling us it's going to be a better season this year. That's just me personally. But when you lose Laremy Tunsil for 4 months, that's not a good sign. So we'll try to find the silver lining to all of this, is that Marcus Mariota will be back to the start of the regular season and hopefully not have to play. And that's really what you want. Just don't want to see Marcus Mariota on the field at all. That means Jaden Daniels hurt. And that's not what anybody wants to see. But you know, you have to think, too, this Commanders team has the potential to also be a really good running team. Put the defense aside for a minute. Let's look at what we saw from Catron Allen and Robert Henry Jr., who's an undrafted rookie. I mean, Catron Allen at 23 carries, 85 yards, and a touchdown. He's got that grinder, high-volume carries if needed. You know, he's the opposite of what Robert Henry Jr. was, who had 12 carries for 75 yards, a 22-yard touchdown. Quick, he was decisive, he's got that vision and explosiveness that you'd want to see, really, more from any other running back that was certainly out there for the Commanders, but you didn't have Rashad White, you didn't have Bill, but they've got an opportunity to rotate through different running backs with different skill sets, and that's going to really help this offense, so you're not leaning on Jaden throwing it 45 times in a game. You can run the football more, you can use different backs in different situations, knowing that they're threats as receivers out of the backfield, knowing that you've got a short yardage guy in Catron Allen, and maybe somebody like Robert Henry Jr. ends up making the roster because of that. And that's really one of the big things that we got to see in the preseason game. And, you know, you're going to continue to see that through most of it, especially in the third game. Maybe not a Sonny Styles, who had limited action. And let's not overreact to, like, them not unleashing him. They just wanted him out on the field. But Robert Henry Jr. and Catron Allen, some of these younger guys, had the opportunity to really get significant touches and really leaned into that and proved that they can win a roster spot on this team. This was Dan Quinn on some of those rookies after the game.
So I was just visiting with Sonny outside, and so just it was like having a little sip today, you know, just got a taste of what it's like and how to go. And so I wasn't pleased defensively on the first drive. I just felt like it was slow going there. And then I thought they got their feet underneath them and got going. But both sides, we started a little slower than I would have liked. And then I thought the teams, you know, got rolling from there. And there was a lot of battling back and forth. But Sonny, I expect, you know, good technique, good speed. And those are the things that he's demonstrated so far in camp. And as far as Robert goes, he and Catron both, I thought, had a nice night, John. And also for Jerome Ford went out, we had three backs for the game. And so when Jerome was out, there was really no flinch from these guys playing on teams, returning. And so that was a good sign. I felt, you know, outside stuff with Rob. And so it was kind of cool to see both these guys, you know, with Catron finishing the game with a first down and a touchdown towards the end. Like, those are the physical style runs we'd expect from him.
And that's what you want to see. You want to see different backs that can do different things for this team. It's a really, really good spot for them to be in, having more than enough talent in that backfield. Because, like, you know who your number one receiver is. You know who your number two receiver is. You know who your number three receiver is. Again, in theory, right? But when it comes to this running back rotation, there's certainly questions there. I mean, would you like to see Bill step up and be a 20-something carry a game guy if they need him? Yeah, is it likely? Probably not. Some of it's just going to be play calling and what you have back there, but to know that you can have Bill and Rashad White and Catron Allen, and maybe they keep four, and Robert Henry Jr. makes the roster, and that means that, you know, Jeremy McNichols and Jerome Ford get cut, and it's just kind of how the roster looks. That you're going to have some serious options back there in the backfield. We always have a preseason hero, right? There's always one. And it's looking like Robert Henry Jr. might be that guy. He might be that guy for this team. Maybe with Catron Allen. They may run the hell out of the football with them a ton. We'll see what happens in the second preseason game at Detroit, where you'll probably get some Bill and maybe a little, you know, couple of touches for Rashad White. But Rashad White's a veteran. He's not going to get much out there. He just get loose, break a sweat, and then say, all right, cool, stand on the sidelines and stay healthy. But they may actually have a run game that's got some serious weapons, and it's that rotating. It's staying creative with the wide receivers, with the running backs. Defensively, too, right? Different looks. And that's what Durante Jones is even doing defensively for them, giving different looks. It's a really – it puts you at a real strength because you always have the other team, offense, defense, whatever side, right, keep them on their heels and showing new things and different layers and keeping it so there's always stuff that's not on film so your next opponent doesn't know everything that's going to be in your playbook, which is, you know, kind of an important adjustment to make too. I'm really excited about Robert Henry Jr. I am. I really am. I think him and Catron Allen both could make this roster. Seven receivers, four backs. I mean, type of offense you have, you got to have to make some sacrifices maybe at other positions, but that might be what they figure out. All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan. If you missed it, the breaking news was that Marcus Mariota has a sprained MCL, according to Adam Schefter, and he will only miss the rest of the preseason, which is great news for the Commanders. You're going to hear from Dan Quinn. He'll be speaking to the media a little bit later today, but could have been a lot worse. Nick Ashew on the Fan. It could have been a lot worse, so now you can breathe a sigh of relief. We can breathe a sigh of relief, because going to Sam Hartman would not have been good. In preseason, it doesn't matter, but like, you got to think, okay, what does the depth of this roster look like? So it's feeling more and more increasingly obvious, too, that Aaron Donald's going to be back for the Rams. And the Commanders will see the Rams later this season. Just keep that in mind. Left side of the line, got some questions. But it could be okay by then, you know? That's the hope. And who? Maybe even Laremy Tunsil's back at that point. But when you have that trickle-down effect of, like, some weaknesses on the line right now at center, left tackle, and then your backup quarterback's hurt, and if it was an extended thing, one hit. I don't want that. I'm not speaking it into existence, but, like, let's be honest with ourselves here. Jaden Daniels was hurt a lot last year. And really, any team in the NFL should think about strong backup quarterback. I mean, you don't have to be a mobile quarterback. Or I know Peyton Manning started most of his games and Tom Brady and all that, but dudes can still get hurt. It still takes one play that is not part of their, you know, it's not their control. It could be a dirty hit. Kirk Cousins started for this team all the time. I get it, but, like, one hit could have sent him to the sidelines. So backup quarterback still has massive importance. You just hope that you never actually see them on the field. But, yeah, look, I think if looking at the Rams here now, like Sean McVay saying, what, this morning or yesterday, that they're not trying to put an actual timetable on this, and I get it. Sean McVay says there's no invisible deadline for a Donald decision. I mean, why would you rush it? He's there. He's working out with the team. He's kept himself in shape. He's a freak specimen as a human, right? There's just genetics and the hard work and all that put together. I had somebody get mad at me yesterday on my Western One show. They were like, oh, I'm from Pittsburgh and you don't know, man. He works hard. I'm like, yeah, it's also genetics, dude. Like, it can be both. Aaron Donald's a freak.
Someone got mad at you?
Yeah, I know. Someone got mad at me. Never. It's not like, I mean, people don't listen. It's like that. It doesn't mean that he doesn't work hard. You can have talent and also work hard. That's what the best do. Kobe Bryant worked his ass off, also had talent. Right? Like, you can have both. You can have physical gifts like LeBron James and also still work hard to take care of those physical gifts. That's what Aaron Donald's going to do. But people got to keep in mind here, too. Like, he's 35. He hasn't played since 2023. In the last five seasons, only Cameron Hayward and Calais Campbell have played at least 40 snaps a game for guys that were 35 or older at that position. So I know that's a lot to put together there, but essentially, at Aaron Donald's age, to expect him to have significant snaps every single game for the Rams may just not be in the cards, especially at the beginning. That doesn't mean that he's not a Hall of Famer. That doesn't mean that he's not a great player. That doesn't mean he's an all-time great defensive havoc-wreaking monster. But it also means that they may not have to put him out there 40 or plus snaps, because you've got, oh, Myles Garrett also out there on the field for the Rams, and a secondary that includes now Trent McDuffie, who they traded for. Rams defense was also pretty good already last year. I mean, I could throw out the nerd stats of 4th in DVOA and 5th in defensive success rate or 6th in defensive EPA per drive if you want, or I could just tell you that they were a good defense. But, you know, when you go with the F them picks mentality, you know, you got to win. And the Rams are a team that is in win-now mode. And look, I look at the NFC really as Rams in their own tier and everybody else. The 49ers won 12 games, but they're getting older. They didn't really do a ton this offseason. And Christian McCaffrey, coming off of another really great season last year, is still hitting that 30 mark. He could or could not hit a wall. There's no guarantees there. But you can use him more as a receiver. Again, he's that evolution of the running back that we've seen. And he's kind of the earlier stages of it, right? Somebody that can be used as a receiver as much as a running back. They may have to start changing what Christian McCaffrey's role looks like in San Francisco. There's questions around the Eagles offense, clearly. New coordinator, Jalen Hurts, all of that. I mean, are the Lions a team after going 8-9? Are they back in the playoffs next year? Do the Bucks get better? You got Baker Mayfield balling out for a new contract, maybe. But they've also cycled through coordinators there, and this was last year was the worst season they had. I mean, Green Bay leaves a lot to question, and they've lost a couple of receivers for sure in that offense. I mean, there's just a lot of questions around the NFC. It doesn't mean that, you know, Dallas can't make a jump. I hate to say it, but they could win double-digit games this year. They only won 7 last year, but again, regular season team, who cares? They'll throw up all over themselves in the playoffs, but it's not about that. But in the regular season, you know, it's something that where Dallas could make a jump. The NFC just feels very wide open. The AFC is a lot more loaded, especially with young quarterbacks, good defenses. You know, there's a lot there. It's different in the NFC right now, where at least again, it's on paper. We haven't seen the regular season. But with all the information we have, talent-wise, it's Rams and everybody else in the NFC. So if they bring back Aaron Donald, which is, again, it looks likely. Matt Stafford still has to stay healthy there. And I know Ty Simpson looked good yesterday in his preseason debut, but he's going up against third stringers. He was 21 of 25, 190 yards, a couple of touchdowns, didn't make mistakes. Cool, but he's going against guys that were, you know, mediocre to good college players but aren't good enough to get to the NFL level or maybe squeak on a roster somewhere. So, yeah, he looked like he did in college. But if he's up against the number one defense, and that's, again, backup quarterback matters. It's Stetson Bennett, then Ty Simpson in L.A., which I think is the right choice. If Ty Simpson's your long-term plan, why put him out there now? He doesn't have a ton of starting experience anyway. But for the Rams, it's the same thing like for the Commanders. One hit could change the whole one injury, one step. For Matt Stafford, you're going with a backup. And it changes the whole season. Stetson Bennett, whoever. So the Rams are above everybody else in the NFC on paper. But the question becomes, how do they actually solidify that in the regular season and keep everybody healthy? That's what you still actually have to see. All right, wrap it up next. Nick Ashew on The Fan. Nick Ashew on The Fan. I'm watching some Brandon Coleman tape here right now against the Dolphins. He looks pretty good. So, you know, again, maybe this will be a situation where, again, Marcus Mariota's injury, now a sprained MCL, going to miss just going to miss the preseason. Maybe Brandon Coleman, who is, you know, kind of looked at as a potential left tackle, fills in well for Laremy Tunsil, and you don't have as many of these worries that you're there. But we got to be honest with ourselves, right? You go from Laremy Tunsil to Nick Allegretti already missing a ton of time in camp with a calf injury, and he needs to get in there and get more reps at center. And then you see Marcus Mariota holding his knee, and you're like, oh, God, here we go. But, again, there are injuries in football. It always happens. But Brandon Coleman looks pretty good. It's limited action, I get that. But watching some of that and getting these reps, it's going to be a real good opportunity for him. So you need that. And the one thing the Commanders really needed more of, and we knew that, was depth. Like, they lacked depth last year. They lacked talent on that depth chart, and they were older and – you know, getting younger partially is because of the fact that you've got to draft well, and they haven't drafted well for the most part over the years. It doesn't mean that there hasn't been some good picks or some guys that have been late-round picks that have stepped up for them, but for the most part, they got a bad track record. You can't, and again, it's even before this front office, but you can't sit here and miss on first and second-round picks year after year after year, and we've got a lot of questions. Trey Amos still has to get healthy and show that he can play consistently. He can, right? Like, he's got talent. Mikey Samristil, you want to see consistency out of both of them. And Samristil maybe playing outside more will help with where he is, and it's a better position for him. And, you know, but again, second round picks like Johnny Newton, these are younger guys that if they were to step up into a bigger role, that helps the team. They're on these smaller contracts, and you don't have to necessarily go out and spend in free agency because you have young talent that's operating on a rookie contract that's also making it so your roster is more manageable. And I know they had all the cap space in the world, but they're not always going to. Good rosters get expensive. It's just how it works. And if you've got a roster that has good young talent, eventually you are going to have to pay some of them or let them walk in free agency. And if they walk, you got to hope you have somebody else waiting in the wing at that position. Or you go out in free agency yourself. But then, you know, a lot of times it's better to have the homegrown guys. They're part of the organization. There's a loyalty that's there. There's a comfort level. And they've grown within the organization. All those are great situations to be in. But, you know, the last couple of years even with this new regime, there's a lot of, I mean, you hope Bill's going to turn into a steal as a seventh round pick, but maybe Ka'Tron Allen, same thing. And that's when things start to change and go your way as a team where you can say, all right, good, we got some young guys. Don't have to be as aggressive in free agency. Let's build from within. That's really the way you want to see a roster build. And then you can fill in with some, you know, one or two expensive free agents. Because they're going to have to think about wide receiver not that long from now. Get ready. Like, that's going to be a part of it. Wide receiver will be probably somebody, you draft somebody this offseason. Free agency, there's not a ton. Unless you want George Pickens, which he's talented, man, but he's a massive headache. We got Nats coverage coming up next. We may hear from Dan Quinn. Got a short little segment after this as well. Nick Ashew on The Fan. Nats Mets coverage coming up in about 10 minutes. Nick Ashew on The Fan. We might maybe hear from Dan Quinn. We'll see. Marcus Mariota, though, sprained MCL, according to Adam Schefter, so he'll miss the rest of the preseason. But it's just preseason. So what looked like it could have been a lot worse, you see non-contact injury and a guy grabbing his knee, you get worried. But it looks like it's just going to be the preseason for Marcus Mariota, and hopefully, again, you don't actually have to see him out there on the field. So hear what Dan Quinn has to say about that. I tell you what, though, we didn't get a chance to get to this, and since we got Nats coverage coming up, I know it's not the Nats, but it is baseball. Wes, Joshua Baez, 3 home runs in a major league debut in his first 3 at-bats. That is one of the most insane stories.
The first pitch of his career
is gone. It is insane. I mean, this is what's great about sports is moments like this. One home run in your debut on the first pitch is great. Like, we've added so many layers of history to what Joshua Baez did yesterday for the Cardinals. It's unbelievable.
I couldn't believe it. I literally could not believe it. It makes me want to go back in time and put him on my fantasy team.
20 of course.
20 points. That's a good pitching, a pitcher, a starting pitcher. Like, it's unbelievable. First pitch of that bat. And then he hits another one. So you're like, wow, this is peak baseball right here. Peak MLB debut. And then he does it again.
Are you a fantasy baseball guy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been doing it for years. I didn't do it last year because it caused me so much stress, and I had to focus on my final year at college.
Well, you're changing lineups every day in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Like, every day.
I just
it's
checked
tough.
Mine right before first pitch for all these.
Now, have you ever done one of the leagues where it's just set for the week?
No.
Okay.
No. You have to set it because you have pitchers on the bench that then start the next day, and then you have a relief pitcher that you want in there. And then it's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
But I watch so much baseball that it's really not that much.
Yeah. I mean, if you're focused on it, then it's a lot easier to move your lineup around. It's like, you know, it's just you have to stick with it every day. It's like fantasy basketball. I love fantasy basketball. I've done it years and years and years, but like there are different leagues. You can either do it so it's the same, you know, it's the lineup for the week, barring an injury or something, or it's just you're changing your lineup every single day. And it's a lot of work. You got to really be dedicated to it to want to change it every day versus getting into DFS or even just fantasy football where it's you're paying attention right before the weekend.
The flex right now, I've won the first time I ever played, I won. The second year, I lost, and then I won again. This year, I am 16-2, and I have won 14 game weeks in a row. I play with guys I used to play baseball with, so this is a competitive league. They just are mad because, you know, I'm part of media, and I know what's going on.
Yeah, but anybody can pay attention to stuff. They have all the resources in the world for fantasy baseball. You're not, like, yeah, you may know some people that could give you some inside information, but, like, is it really that much? Tell them to shut up.
Oh, I do.
Tell them to stop complaining.
14, come on, guys. I've won 14 weeks in a row.
Yeah, you're just better than them with it.
Thank you.
You got a fantasy sleeper for anybody right now since you're clearly good at this?
Fantasy sleeper. Well, I got, let's see, who do I add recently on my team? I added...
Not Joshua Baez, we know that.
No, I did not. Logan Henderson.
Okay.
I added him a couple weeks ago. Then he had 22 points, 19 points, and then 12 points. So him going in the playoffs here pretty soon for fantasies, it's good. A lot of the thing is about baseball, you drop so many players. If I read out my week 2 team, it's completely different from where I am right now.
Yeah.
I would probably say 70% of the players I had to start off are gone. Because
of
injuries.
That's some serious roster turnover.
Yeah, I had Cal Raleigh. He's gone. He's batting, I don't know, 200 this year. Edward Cabrera, pitcher that I had for a few weeks, and then he started underperforming. So you constantly are changing. Not only are you changing the lineup all the time, but you're picking up and dropping players constantly. That is really the challenging part. Picking the guys who have upside, because a lot of players like Jose Soriano for the Angels, best pitcher in the league to start off the year, and he slowly started to drop off. So that's what you got to focus on, and kind of it's a prediction in a way with these players.
I really wish the Nats were still in contention for a wild card.
It makes a lot more fun.
I mean, yeah.
To talk about baseball when the Nats are good. And we had that for a couple weeks.
I know. I mean, they're 5 games under 500 now, 6.5 back of a wild card spot. I'd like to see them beat the Mets. You see the Mets trolling Jaden Daniels like everybody else the other day? We stopped at 4.
Well, did you hear about 5 guys? They're now 4 guys.
They're now 4 guys.
Yep.
Yeah. There's been a lot of this. For anybody that was like, it's not a big deal. I'm like, dude, this is a big deal. It's a bad look.
One of the universities is getting rid of the 5-yard line. Out of respect. LSU, in fact, they do the 5, 10, 15 yard markers. They don't do by 10. They got to get rid of that 5.
Got to get rid of that. Got to get rid of it. This is, look, I know we've talked about this for a few days, and it's I haven't spent a ton of time on it because there's a certain point where, like, it just is what it is, and people got all pissy at me and what I said on social media.
Wait, what did you say, though?
Well, no, my thing was that this is a bad look.
Oh, and, of course it's a bad look.
Like, you need to understand that, like, I don't care if you know the full story or not. Approaching it in this way, when you know, like, somebody's family is in charge of your business ventures, there is emotion that's going to be involved with it that wouldn't be if you had agents and business managers involved, where that's more unbiased and it's focused on the right ways to approach it. And it's like, it's great that his family supports him. Of course it is. But you have to be careful because there is going to be an emotion tied to decisions, or, you know, even a level of, you know, loyalty that's going to be there where you're like, well, it's you screwing you over. They promised this and they didn't do it. Now we're mad. And it's emotional versus logical. Like, a business manager would not, or an agent, either one, publicist, doesn't matter, would not have approached it in the way that they did. It would not have been public. It would not, like, it just would not have gone that way.
Absolutely not.
And it looks bad. It looks really bad on him.
Great. He won the Heisman, a personal award. That's awesome. But
yeah,
this is the way I think about it. And I was talking to Doc. He lost 7 games in 2 years. And I just want to put it, if you're an Ohio State quarterback and you lose 7 games in 2 years, you're banned from campus. So I'm not exactly sure why he thinks he's the next Joe Burrow. He didn't win the national championship. You didn't win the last game of the year. Nobody cares.
And that's the big issue, is that he has to play, and he always will be, in Joe Burrow's shadow at LSU. And you saw it. Leonard Fournette talked about it. Leonard Fournette was like, when he was asked about retiring number 5, he's like, no, we haven't retired number 9. It's also hard to retire numbers in college. You don't have a lot of available numbers.
No, Troy Smith won the Heisman for Ohio State, and the number 10 gets worn all the time. Julian Sain is wearing number 10 right now. No one cares. He didn't win the national championship. Why do I care about Troy Smith's number? Is that Eddie George or Archie Griffin?
The only thing that worries me about this is that Jaden Daniels left Arizona State with teammates kind of making fun of him and saying they were glad he's gone. And I know he was a much better quarterback at LSU. But then you have this relationship and this bridge essentially burned at LSU. Like, those are red flags to me. Now, it could end up being nothing, but those are red flags to me.
It is possible that we don't know him. Actually, we don't know him completely.
The only thing I will tell people is the things that are said about Jaden Daniels, maturity and leadership and all this stuff, are the same things that were said about RG3 his rookie year. And what I always said was, what is going to happen when he faces adversity?
Well, and look at who RG3 is now.
Right, and I'm not in any way saying that they are the same person, same player. All I'm saying is this situation raises red flags that are concerning. And you hope that it's never a thing again, and he's a great leader, and it doesn't become about, you know, you have to be careful. And some of it is perception is reality, right? And there is a level of perception around him with that looks very selfish and immature, and you're getting trolled by the Mets, and it's the Mets. Like, the Mets are trolling you, and that's a problem. And I know it's social media.
And they beat the Nats 2 days in a row.
Yeah, so it doesn't help the situation at all. And maybe the Nats can do something different today. That coverage is going to, you know, be starting after us here, and maybe in solidarity, they'll all wear number 5 patches on their jerseys for against the Mets today. No, we're not going to do that. Okay, Mets probably have some fun with that. But yeah, look, in the end, if Jaden Daniels is healthy and has a great season, nobody's going to care, and that's what we all want anyway. That's what he wants. It's good to put last season behind you. But he did have an opportunity to say things a little bit more, and just when the post on Instagram was just, "I'm focused on the season." Okay. Other people are paying attention to this, though. So, all right, Nats-Mets coverage coming up next. I'll be back tomorrow on Overtime on The Fan. Nick Ashew.